France is already a strong counterterrorism partner, and today we're announcing a new agreement. We're streamlining the process by which we share intelligence and operational military informational with France.
Now, back to more Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
We are trying to find General David Grange, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this. Last year at this time, I called him to wish him happy Thanksgiving, and his wife, who is ex-military as well, said, yeah, I don't know where he is. And I figured, like, he was out front in the yard, he's mowing the lawn or whatever.
Yeah.
He was in Iraq.
Yeah.
Okay. He is one of the leaders of a group that I don't know specifically what they do, and
well,
I don't think he can tell me.
No.
But he provides military intelligence analysis and things of that nature.
Consultation.
Mm-hmm. You know, here's a guy that was the head of the Big Red One, leading the 1st Division of the United States Army. He was in Croatia for the Serbia-Bosnia War and engaged in PSYOPs there, and he was in Gulf One, obviously was in Vietnam. And he's got an interesting life story, too, in that he claims he was a kid that was kind of a pain in the butt. His father was already a decorated member of our military service. And he finally got talked into trying the service out. He was going to go in for a couple of years.
And it worked out pretty well for him.
Yeah, here we are, what, 45 years later?
Yeah.
So at 6:11, we welcome to the show my friend and yours, General David Grange. Good morning, General. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I was just explaining to everyone that you tried the military out, and that was about 45 years ago.
That's when I started trying it out.
Yeah.
I didn't end it then. I ended it, 15 ago.
Yeah. Is it Osprey Global Solutions?
Yes, sir.
And I can't ask you about that, right? I mean, if I ask you about that, you're going to tell me like it's
No, it's fine. It's medical. It's some logistics in remote areas, and it's some security.
Yeah,
very
I don't
simple.
Think...
Very small organization.
Yeah, I don't think you're telling me the truth, and I don't think you should. I always think when I'm talking to Dave, to General Grange, I always think when I'm talking to him, it's like, well, he's telling me what's right for me. But I appreciate that, General. I do.
I don't want you to hurt yourself. It's all for you.
Remember, I'm still an honorary private. All right, it's six.
No, corporal.
A corporal. Oh, I didn't know I got promoted. Wow, that's exciting news. All right, so here's the situation. We know that these cowards, these creeps, ISIS, have killed 129 in Paris, 350 injured. And of this 350 injured, more will likely die on the critical list. We know they're cowards. We know they hide in the shadows. We know they kill innocent people. As you know, General Grange, everybody walking around would like an easy TV solution to this. We're the United States, damn it. Let's go in and wipe them out. There can't be more than 25 or 30,000 of them. What's the answer to that question?
Yeah, you're not going to wipe them all out, even if you do a massive attack. But you sure as heck need to go on the offensive and attack them. There's no doubt about that. Not only in Syria and Iraq, with a step up the pace there, not just bomb strikes, but go in so they can't sleep at night and grab in bed. Merely make them nervous. Go everywhere, all over the place, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, in the Middle East, wherever the case may be. But at the same time, wouldn't it be nice that we responded in not a reactionary way, but we did preemptive strikes before they would happen? In other words, start an offensive with a coalition of intelligence gathering a little bit more robust than we have. It's not that we don't have it. We do have it. But not as robust as it should be. And then really go after them. And I'm just surprised that we haven't had more issues here. Thank goodness that we have some of the law enforcement agencies that we do have that have preempted some stuff. But I'm talking about, when I say preemptive, I'm talking about going in aggressively and taking down as fast as possible, as hard as possible, so they just can't rest. Stay on them.
And it's really the only way to attack these cockroaches. And as you say, we can't get all of them, but we can certainly get a bunch of them. And maybe in the process, turn away some of these misguided goofballs who think this is the path in their life. And they go and maybe they get sucked into this recruiting.
That's right. And, think about what they have to do. If you put yourself in their boots, they have to set up a network, a support network in Belgium, in France, in Serbia, in Croatia, wherever. They have to have a support network. Otherwise, they can't move the guns, the ammo. They can't eat. They can't sleep. They can't get cars. They can't get fake passports. They can't do this, whatever. They have one heck of a network set up. Why wouldn't they? That's how you operate. That's how we operate. It's called shaping the battlefield before the attack. And so they've done one heck of a job shaping the battlefield. And, of course, their battlefield is global. And where the societies allow certain things to happen, they take advantage of it, just like in Belgium. And that's why you have such a nest.
How many of these people are true believers? I don't know that we have any way to quantify it. But, you know, bin Laden was a true believer who also dabbled in porn and all the other things to make him comfortable in life. They're all hypocritical true believers. But I just have a sense that everybody in life has to have a meaning and a reason for whatever their behavior is. So while they're sucking all these losers in to play their game and go kill themselves in the public, the typical despot dictator model is Baghdadi hides wherever he's hiding and doesn't do any of the dirty work. So is he a true believer? Is there a network of true believers? Or are they just in it for the money like most thugs are?
I think there are some true believers in all religions. I think that there are a lot of people, what you just articulated, that use it to their advantage, to use it as a vehicle in order to recruit, persuade, and deploy people to do terrible things to fit their agenda, whether it be for money, whether it be for power, control of the populations, whatever the case may be. And so, yes, they do attract a lot of people that can't make it elsewhere, that have a grudge against the United States or against France or whatever the case may be. And they're very good at manipulating that. It's almost like a Hitler character. And they have a hell of a propaganda machine, and they use it well with social media and everything else. So, yeah, I think they hide behind that as an excuse.
General, with regard to this particular faction, ABC News was bringing the cameras into Belgium and areas of Brussels and kind of tracing their path from Syria across Europe. And through Brussels, they went to this particular street, and people were saying, yeah, this area is a hotbed. You know, there's a lot of radical Islam, you know, radicals here in this particular street. One of these terrorists was even on a watch list.
Right.
So I guess my question is, how do you detain them, arrest them? How do you get them and hold them before they've done anything, before it leads to this?
Well, that's a tough question because of liberties, right? Of First Amendment stuff, right, in our country and civil liberties. I mean, it's very difficult. I mean, we have suspects, but it doesn't mean that they can be arrested or detained. And there's a limited amount of resources to watch everybody that may be a suspect or unusual actions. I actually do think we do a pretty good job in our country on it, but it's not good enough because we don't resource it the way it should be. But you can't protect everything, but you sure can do a better job in what is being done right now, especially with coalitions, not phony coalitions with names of countries on paper, but people that actually do action, that actually do things. I just came back from visiting some associates in the Balkans couple weeks ago, and they're very concerned about the refugee movement and the rat lines and the support structures up through Greece, up through Serbia, Croatia as one route. But Brussels has a no-go zone where actually people don't like to go in. Law enforcement don't even like to go in there. It's the same in Marseille, France. There's parts of Marseille that you don't go in, which is ludicrous. It's amazing. Now, do we have parts in Baltimore we don't go into? Are there other places in the United States we're afraid to go into? If the cops are not supported, the law enforcement,
right,
then they maybe have that attitude.
Right. And how do you stop them if you don't have the people going in to get them? Right.
Yeah, I mean, you can't protect society that way. It just is not going to work. And so that's kind of what we're facing. But, you know, you really need to get serious because the first responsibility of any kind of leadership, whether it be at local, state, or federal level, is protecting the citizenry.
Yeah,
that's the first mission.
And when you look at these cowards, hiding, who go out and kill, and, you know, I don't want this to sound trite because I don't mean it to be trite at all, but 129 people dying is far less than the amount of people that die every day in car crashes. But it's because of the way these people died, and it's because of the fact that they were murdered almost in front of us and the constant barrage of cover of those stories. The number isn't as important as what these people mean, and there aren't a lot of them. So the idea that we would continue to allow them, and I know we're striking back, and I know we're doing certain things, but it does seem like if we're not going to step up now, I don't know when we would. And that's easy for me to say from Michigan Avenue in my nice warm talk show studio, but it does seem to be common sense that it's going to get bigger and it's going to get worse because that's what we've seen. Maybe we shut them down a year ago. I don't like to go backwards, but maybe they don't get this big. Now they've expanded and they're in various places, and every time they pop their head up, we got a whack-a-mole. So what's the role of Russia and the United States in this, and will Obama work with Putin? Do we know that?
Well, there's differences between the Russia and the United States. They have their own agenda, and we have to be cognizant of that and watch out into the future. But this is an advantage right now of what happened, sadly enough, in order to work together to go after a common enemy. What's interesting is common enemies, okay, take right now Putin is supporting more of a Shia group because of the Hezbollah, Iran,
right.
Syrian peace, right? We're supporting, actually, we don't really pick certain sides. Putin did.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes Sunnis are friends, sometimes Shias friends, sometimes Kurds are friends. Actually, I think Kurds are friends all the time.
Right.
But that's my personal belief. But the it's very difficult, but you have to form partnerships in order to go after certain threats. Always keeping an eye open that who's your friend today may be your enemy tomorrow. And but you have to do that. Now, those that we have long-time trust with, i.e., England, France, Germany, etc., those are reliable tier one partners. Putin would be more like a tier two at the best. But it's we ought to use him to our advantage. It's nothing wrong with that for our survival.
Absolutely.
Use him to our advantage. Yeah.
And are the Saudis and the rest of the Arabic world with military power stepping up?
Well, you see, you have a country like Saudi who is actually a little bit of in a panic because of the oil prices. At the same time, they're doing a Yemeni fight down south, which is being prosecuted by the Iran with a kind of a Shia sect against a Sunni sect. You have ISIS threatening Medina as an example, Mecca. And then you have the internal issues. So Saudi is a little nervous about all that. Have they stepped up in certain ways? Yes. Have they stepped up in others? Not as much as we would like, but they're looking at their own survival. Do they have their share of homegrown terrorists that threaten us? Absolutely. It's quite a chess game. I mean, you have to geopolitically be pretty clever to sort it all out and know who to strike and who's your friend forever and who's your friend today and or tomorrow.
I'll let you go on this, and maybe it's a bad example, but do you anticipate that we're going to be seeing a coalition like we saw over Libya to get rid of Gaddafi?
I do, and it may not be exactly the same kind of setup. That was a little simpler in regards to who the enemy is. This one's a little tougher because Baghdadi with ISIS is only – remember, they have a network of networks. They may hate each other in certain
right.
times, but they hate us worse.
Right.
And so their network is phenomenal. I mean, I wish we had a network as formidable as some of these enemies, terrorist enemies that we have. They're unbelievable. They're pros at it. They leverage it.
Right.
And so you can imagine these different terrorist groups tied to arms smuggling, human trafficking, drug smuggling. And then terrorist acts, et cetera, with also some surrogate nations in support. It's pretty involved. It's very sophisticated. This isn't just some kind of a little gang group. It's more sophisticated than that. And so we have to form something to take them down. It can't be done by one country alone. But again, it's reactionary. This ought to be a normal, just like you just talked about people dying from car wrecks. It's an everyday occurrence, so people don't think about it much. You don't hear it on the news. Well, fighting terrorists ought to be an everyday act.
Right.
It ought to be a matter of fact, a way of life. That's the way it is now.
That's the world.
Way to take them down 24/7.
And that's the world we're going to live in. Thanks for jumping on. I know you got a million things to do, and I appreciate your time and your expertise. And I hope you're safe in whatever part of the world you're in, because I think about you a lot.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it, and it's a pleasure to be on with you.
It's General David Grange, and real American hero.
And he adds great insight to everything that's going on right now.